Yo shit.
Yo shit.
Of women.
Of women.
Hiranya.
Hiranya.
Golden.
Golden.
Abhorna.
Abhorna.
Ornaments.
Ornaments.
Ambara.
Ambara.
Clothing.
Clothing.
Adi.
Adi.
And so on.
And so on.
Dravyeshu.
Dravyeshu.
Upon seeing such things.
Upon seeing such things.
Maya.
Maya.
By the illusory energy of the Lord.
By the illusory energy of the Lord.
Rachiteshu.
Rachiteshu.
Manufactured.
Manufactured.
Mudaha.
Mudaha.
A fool with no discrimination.
A fool with no discrimination.
Pralobhita.
Pralobhita.
Aroused by lusty desires.
Aroused by lusty desires.
Atma.
Atma.
Such a person.
Such a person.
He.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Upaboga.
Upaboga.
For sense gratification.
For sense gratification.
Bhujya.
Bhujya.
With a desire.
With a desire.
Patangavat.
Patangavat.
Like the moth.
Like the moth.
Nashati.
Nashati.
Is destroyed.
Is destroyed.
Nashta.
Nashta.
Is ruined.
Is ruined.
Drishtihi.
Drishtihi.
Whose intelligence.
Whose intelligence.
Translation. A foolish person with no intelligent discrimination is immediately aroused at the sight of a lusty woman, beautifully decorated with golden ornaments, fine clothing, and other cosmetic features. Being eager for sense gratification, such a fool loses all intelligence and is destroyed, just like the moth who rushes into the blazing fire. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, actually it's not Srila Prabhupada, it's Rinananda Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada's servants. Actually, women have the power to attract men through all the material senses. Men become lusty by seeing the body of a woman, by smelling her fragrance, by hearing her voice, by tasting her lips, and by touching her body. However, the foolish relationship based on material sex attraction begins by seeing, and thus rupa or form is very prominent in the process of ruining one's intelligence. This fact has been exploited in modern times by huge pornography industries which prey on unfortunate men and women. The example of the foolish moth rushing into the fire and destroying itself is the most appropriate in this regard, for one who becomes addicted to the momentary pleasure of sex indulgence certainly loses his power to understand the spiritual reality behind dull matter. A lusty person becomes blind and foolish through sex indulgence, and his soul is lost in the fire of sense gratification. This whole disaster can be avoided by taking seriously to the process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his empowered representatives, such as Srila Prabhupada, have created a movement to save people from the dungeon of material life, and we should all seriously take advantage of this opportunity. So, Yoshidranya Varanambarodi. Javyeshu maya rachiteshu mudaha pralobitatma yupalpoga bhuja patangavannashati nashta drishtihi. So omagana tumadanda shah gananjana shalakaya chakshur miditam yena tasmai shigurve namaha. So remember yesterday I was describing why the attraction between men and women is so intense, and the strongest attraction within this material world. Remember, I described that because it's the highest attraction in the spiritual world between Radha and Krishna. And Radha and Krishna become bewildered too by this attraction. I remember there's one story told by Srila Rupa Goswami. It's quite interesting that one time Radharani was getting ready to basically end her life because she felt herself unchaste. Why did she feel herself unchaste? Because she was attracted, she felt, by three different men. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're thinking, how can three different men attract Srimati Radharani? She's the most chaste to Krishna. She never thinks of anything other than Krishna, and Krishna never thinks of anything other than Srimati Radharani. So she was telling her friends, Vishakha and Lalita, that I'm very unchaste because I'm being attracted by three men, and there's one of the men plays a flute, I'm attracted to him. Another one whose name is Krishna, I'm attracted to him. And another one who's that bluish, blackish boy I see in the forest. I'm attracted to him. So she was thinking, she was actually, her mind was actually stolen by these three different aspects of Krishna. Obviously, we understand it's all the same person. So she was getting ready to commit suicide, and then her friends informed her, it's the same person. So then she was very much relieved, feeling like that. But then there's other times where Radharani is simply trying to get Krishna out of her mind, and she can't do it. And there's other times when the gopis are trying to forget Krishna, and they're talking about, let's forget Krishna, let's forget that blackish, bluish boy, and then somehow or other they keep talking about him over and over again, since they can't forget him. They said, well, if you're trying to forget him, why are you talking about him? They can't stop, excuse me, they can't stop talking about him or thinking about him. So that is the most intense attraction in the spiritual realm, the highest ras, the highest taste in the spiritual realm. So in the same way, the most intense, forceful attraction in this world is the attraction between male and female, because everyone here, at least, is trying to become Purusha. Both the men and the women are trying to become men. And I don't mean in a sense that they're, transgender or something like that. They're trying to change their genders. That's not the point, you know, physically. But they're trying to be the enjoyer. As Krishna says in the Gita, the demoniac consciousness is Ishwaroham Ahambhogi Siroham Balavan Sukhi. That is the demoniac person's Gayatri mantra. I'm giving you a Gayatri mantra right now. You can chant several times a day and become completely immersed in the material energy. Ishwaroham, what is this? I'm the controller. So both the women and the men are trying to be the controllers, right?
Yeah.
The men in a more direct way. Just like sometimes we're speaking to some man, he says, I would like to marry a girl from India who is very submissive. Of course, what I don't tell them is that after you marry her, she's not submissive anymore. Or we go to this place like, sometimes on the way to India, we used to go through Thailand and see all these Western men walking around with Thai girls, you know, married to them. Because they want, there's this illusion, they want some servants. They want to be the controller, the Parameshwara. And even in the Vedic culture, the man is generally called by the wife Swami. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Swami means master, not sannyasi master. But Swami. Oh, Swami. And then the husband comes home and she massages his feet. It's almost like that conception of, in America, who is the man's best friend? The dogs. Because why is the dog the man's best friend? Because the dog just is always obsequious. That's a fancy word for those of you who don't know fancy words. Obsequious means someone who's always trying to please you. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Having someone who's always trying to please you. Your wish is my command.
And unconditionally.
Unconditionally, yeah. Just waits all day long, fetches your slippers, gets your newspaper, turns on the TV for you.
And we even sit down and be quiet if you want him to.
Yeah. Sit. So he sits down. Roll over. Roll over. So we all want to become Ishwaras in this world. It means controllers. And some people want to take sannyas to be Ishwaras. Isn't it? We've seen that. It's very common. They want to be controllers or enjoy their senses in the name of renunciation. Anyway, that's Falgu Vairagya. So, in any case, Ishwaroham, I am the Ishwar. So the women are also thinking the same way. Just like they are controlling the men. Differently than, you know, the men control the women by, I guess, however they control them. I don't know. I'm not so familiar with this. But somehow they control them. I'm the boss. I'm giving you the money. You're
not with the money, no.
Yeah, the money. And the women control the men, you know, with their eyelashes or something. Like I said, I'm a sannyasi. I'm not that familiar with these techniques. Or sweet words. Or cooking. Yeah, cooking. Like a way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So it cooks nicely. And then, what do they say in Spanish? A barriga llena, corazón contenta. Right? Yeah, right? Barriga llena, corazón contenta. That means barriga, the stomach is full, the heart is content or happy. So, anyway, so both the women and the men are trying to be the Ishwar. Just like I was just hearing the Ramayana this morning, because I listened to different audio books while I'm doing my puja, and about Kaikeyi. You know Kaikeyi? She's one of the wives of Dasarath. And so she was advised by Manthara that you should get Dasarath to exile Ram for 14 years, the Dandakaranya forest, and enthrone Bart. So the way you can do that is to somehow or other manipulate Dasarath. I mean, he already gave you these promises when you saved him in the battlefield, that whatever you wanted, he would give you. You know, boons, it's called. So, but she said, you have to go a little further than that. I mean, be a little bit more convincing. So you should go to the room in your palace. Actually, the queens had a room in a palace called the anger room, or the depression room. You know, they have rooms for everything. So there was a room where they could actually just show their anger. I guess it had padded walls or something like that. Like a mental institution. So, Dasarath, after deciding to enthrone Ram as the regent, that means the next king, he wanted to see his favorite queen, and his favorite queen was Kaikeyi. So Kaikeyi was in this anger room, or depression room, or whatever you may call it, and she was on the floor, and acting, actually, to control Dasarath. And so Dasarath comes to his wife's bedroom and he doesn't find her there. And then he asks the servants, where is she? And then he goes to the anger room and she's on the floor. And he says, what's wrong? What's wrong? You'll never understand me. Like ladies do sometimes, isn't it? You'll never understand me. And the man just asks a logical question. What's there to understand? And the woman says, just see, that proves you'll never understand me. So anyway, so like there's this famous book, Men Are from Mars and Women Are from Venus, right? Mm-hmm. From different planets. You need an interpreter. You can use, what is that, translate.google.com when you're trying to communicate. So anyway, so she cries and cries and finally says, you know, please get up. Please get up. And she goes, he says, I'll do anything for you if you get up. And then she says, you mean it? Like that. You know, so he says, yes, yes, get up. And she gets up and she says, all right. Remember the two boons you gave? And he says, yes, whatever you want, dear, I'll give you. And she says, well, first of all, I want my son, Bart, enthroned. And Dasarath says, all right, I guess that's all right. Maybe what can you do about it? But then she gives the zinger. She says, I want Ram exiled to the forest for 14 years. And then Dasarath, basically, he collapses, gets down on his hands and knees, starts, you know, touching her feet, becoming her obedient servant. I mean, it's just like horrendous what he has to go through. And he says, please, anything but that. And she just is adamant. No. You should keep your promise. You're a member of the Suryavamsa. Don't you remember all your illustrious ancestors? how they all kept their promises, Ikshvaku, and all these other illustrious ancestors, and you're not ready to keep your promise. You're an embarrassment to your clan. And so in this way, she's also manipulating like that, psychologically, you know, guilt feelings, all these other things like that. And then finally, he basically collapses and gives in because of her manipulation. So you see that, you know, ladies control and men control. And then also, mothers and fathers control. Sometimes there's a controlling, I mean, at least in my family, they would control through guilt trips. If you actually love me, you would do this. Did you ever hear that before? That's a common thing. I mean, it's that's verbal abuse, actually. I hate to tell you. There's the assumption that you don't love me. And you just like, it's a zinger in the heart, you know, if you actually love me, if you actually care for your mother, if you actually wanted your mother to live, then you would do that. Just like when I joined the movement, my mother communicated to me that she was dying because I was joining the Hare Krishna movement. Mm-hmm. And I was going to be the cause of her death. Mm-hmm. And now that was, I don't know how many years, 40 years ago or something like that. That's 40 years. 40 years ago. 40 some odd years ago. And she's 85 and she's stronger than me. She swims 50 laps in a swimming pool every day, you know, bicycles, practically, you know, engages in wrestling. So, not really, not wrestling, but the other things are true. And so, you know, control. So we're trying to control people. We all want to be Ishwaras. I mean, even if you're just a pauper, you want to be the controller of your particular tent or small house or whatever. Everybody wants to be the controller. And when you lose control, then you get very angry. That's a symptom. So, Ishwaroham Aham Bhogi, the second part of this verse is Aham Bhogi. I'm the enjoyer. In other words, I'm not meant to be enjoyed, which is the situation of prakriti rather than purusha. But purusha is, I am the enjoyer, and things are meant for my enjoyment. Like you see in modern society, that's the propaganda. Everything is meant for your enjoyment. Enjoy, and they control, manipulate, get people to buy things.
You just have to be able to pay for it.
Yeah, you pay for it. I mean, they don't say that, you know. And they start the kids off in this. We even when they're young, you got to buy this, enjoy whatever it is, you know, this toy or this food. It's like I remember when I was young, they tried to get everyone addicted to cigarettes by giving them chocolate cigarettes when they were young. Hmm. I don't know if you remember that when you were young. Yeah, we had chocolate cigarettes.
Candy
or chocolate. We had chocolate, which is better than regular candy. So chocolate cigarettes, and you put them in your mouth, get used to the taste, delicious. Like that. And so they're utilizing your particular desire to be the purusha, or the enjoyer, to manipulate, to enjoy you. So it's like Prabhupada said, the cheater's in the cheated. Right? Yeah. You're thinking you're the enjoyer, but they're turning you into the enjoyed. So it's like a whole pecking order of, you know, one enjoyer, and then one enjoyer becomes the enjoyed by a higher enjoyer, by a higher enjoyer, by a higher enjoyer, and then there's finally Maya, who's manipulating everybody and pinning the tail on the donkey, which is all of us. You ever played that game when you were young, pin the tail on the donkey? They blindfold you. You never played that? Some of you, Americans,
jump
definitely.
On you.
What?
And they jump on you?
No. They blindfold you and they turn you in a circle, and then they have you have this little tail with a pin on it, and you're supposed to like walk around the room. And sometimes you end up pinning someone else instead of the donkey. And anyway, somehow or other, it was a game. So Krishna, Maya is playing pin the tail on the donkey with us, and we're the donkey. Because we're thinking with the enjoyer, but actually, Maya is just manipulating us. It's really ridiculous.
Go to a So,
Ishwaroham, aham bogi, and then siddoham. The next one is siddoham. I am perfect. I'm powerful. What is that? Perfect. Just like one guru in ISKCON one time told me, he said, I've never made a mistake in my life. Actually, he said, I've only made one mistake in my whole life. And that mistake was, I thought I made a mistake. You know, pretty good. That's the only mistake I ever made. I thought I made a mistake. So,
no problem with his confidence.
Yeah, no problem with his self-confidence and self-image and all that. Self-esteem, you know, he's got it made. So, of course, he was joking, but sometimes in joke, when one's joking and jest, you know, you reveal.
Say the truth.
You know, we reveal what we're thinking. So, you know, I'm perfect. You know, I don't make mistakes. Or if I make mistakes, it's very rare, like that. So, siddoham, and then balavan, I'm powerful. Powerful, exercising myself, developing muscles, or engaged in cultivation of physical culture in one way or the other, or utilizing modern science to prolong your life, the stem cell technology whereby you're going to be able to grow any organ and replace it, you know, grow a new heart, grow a new brain. Anyway, so, yeah, through modern technology, it's sort of enhancing this, and actually one walks around with his iPhone, you know, I can communicate with anyone at any time, at any place, and, you know, even we succumb to that. You know, I have an iPhone, too, and I just look at it, my iPhone will tell me everything. Just like yesterday, I was talking to devotees about airfares to India. I said, I can find out any of that stuff. I'm a frequent flyer, I know all these things. Let me pick out my iPhone, and I was just picking out these different fares to different places. I'm so proud of it. I'm powerful, intelligent. Or I'll study a lot of things, all sorts of different useless subject matters to impress people. You understand? Balavan, and then Balavan, I'm powerful, and then Balavan, Sukhi, and I'm happy. Balavan Sukhi. So this is the verse from the chapter Divine and Demoniac Natures. Ishwaroham, Aham Bhogi, Siddoham, Balavan Sukhi. So the demons, they naturally chant. This is from Rani Kashipu's mantra. Ishwaroham, Aham Bhogi, and Ravana's mantra. And we're all chanting it, you know, internally. I'm perfect, powerful, happy, etc. But basically, that's not our nature. That's not our constitutional position. Our constitutional position is to be prakriti. That means we're actually meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. But as long as we think we're supposed to be the enjoyers, then the illusory energy can capture us, like it's described here in this verse. I mean, let me give one example, interesting example, of how the illusory energy in the form of the opposite sex caused living entities to lose their eternal, or to lose a long life at least. This is the story of the demons and the demigods. Once upon a time, the demons had become very powerful because they had gotten the association of their guru, Shukracharya, who was able to bring them back to life. Even after they died, he had the Mrityu Sanjeevani mantra. You know, so he could actually bring someone who died. So the demons were becoming more powerful than the demigods. So the demigods got bewildered. And they went to Lord Vishnu and they said, you know, what are we going to do? And Lord Vishnu said, well, I got a plan for you. Go to the demons and tell them we'd like to churn the ocean of milk. And in this way, you're all going to get Amrit, or the nectar of immortality. You're going to be able to live forever. At least such a long time, it's like it's forever, right? So, what they were doing, so they went to the demons and said, my dear demons, we want to churn this ocean and get nectar of immortality. And the demons said, why should we do this? Our guru can bring us back to life anyway. And the guru said, yeah, why should we do it? And then they had an answer. They said to Shukracharya, their guru, that yes, you can bring them back to life as long as you're alive. But when you die, no one's going to bring you back to life. And no one's going to bring them back to life. So it's all dependent on you. And he was thinking for a second, yes, you're right. So we should churn this, and we're going to share this immortality nectar, the Amrit. So they all went to this milk ocean, and they were churning. Of course, they used the suki as the churning, the rope. And then Mandara Mountain is the churning rod. And we know that Lord Vishnu assumed the tortoise incarnation to support Mount Mandara, and he also came above Mount Mandara to support it. So anyway, churning, churning, churning. I'm not going to describe the whole affair that occurred. But eventually, this doctor incarnation of Krishna, Dhanvantari, came out. And he came out with a pot of amrit, or nectar. The nectar of immortality. Can you imagine if I had this nectar of immortality and I said, all right, does anyone want to drink it? You would say, wow! I said, this will cure all your problems, arthritis, rheumatism, heart problems, cancer. I mean, I would rush over to where Punta Ricas is right now and cure his Parkinson's if I had this. I mean, I would just be, I wouldn't sit here. You know, I'd be just running around. First, I'd drink it myself, of course. And then I'd run around giving it to everybody. Okay. So, came out, but what happened is that the demons stole it. And they weren't going to share it with their brothers, the demigods, because the demigods are actually brothers of the demons, at least half brothers, as Kashyapa Aditi, Kashyapa Aditi. You know, two different mothers, same father.
And the mothers were sisters.
The mothers were sisters, yeah. So, I mean, they're brothers. So the demons stole it, and but the interesting thing about demons, and even about devotees who are not yet pure, who are neophytes, they fight. That's why neophytes are called neophytes. Neophyte. You know, they're new and they fight with each other. Because they don't see Krishna in everyone's heart. They see Krishna's on the altar. Right? But outside of the temple room, Krishna's not there. So let's go, let's leave the temple room and we'll have a big fight. Boy, he won't fight you in front of the deities. Because that's an offense. But the deity is in your heart. So if you fight or hate someone, you're committing an offense. Because deity's there. But you're thinking deity's just there. Close the curtains, and then we can do any sort of nonsense. It's interesting, isn't it? You close the curtains. All right, now we can talk Prajalpa. So anyway, getting back to the point of the nectar. So the demons started fighting with each other. No, I want to take first. I want to take first. So at least the nectar wasn't taken right away. And the demigods were all bewildered. What are we going to do? You know, these demons are going to become more powerful now because they've gotten the nectar. Not only do they have this Mritu Sanjeevani from their spiritual master, Shukracharya, but they have the nectar of mortality. So, naturally, they prayed to Lord Vishnu again. And Lord Vishnu said, all right, you got yourself in trouble. So I'm going to help you. So the demigods, it's interesting, they pray whenever they're in trouble. Of course, it's better than nothing. That's like Sakama devotee. You pray when you're in trouble, and when everything's going well, you take the credit for it yourself. Say this. So I'm a self-made man. So they prayed. And Lord Vishnu said, all right, I'll take care of this. Don't worry, boys. Sit down and enjoy yourselves for a while. And then Lord Vishnu appears as Mohini Murti. So here are the demons fighting with each other. And this Mohini Murti, the female incarnation of the Lord, appears before them. And basically they forget about immortality. Right? She says, hi boys. Or whatever she says, you know. You're all such nice, handsome demons. You got good muscles on you, or something like that. Anyway, and they just look, oh. And they say, wow, we're fighting with each other. Can you divide the nectar up fairly? And she says, She actually says, you know, truthfully, how could you trust me? How do you know I'm a chaste lady? You know, how do you know these things? You can't trust me. And they said, no, we trust you. Because you're lovely. So they said, you know, that's logical, you know. If someone looks good, you trust them. Would you trust the Terminator? Is it because he looks good? Arnold Schwarzenegger, he doesn't look so good anymore. So it works with both ways, like the men trusting the women trusting the men. Like you see some strong, handsome person, like, I don't know. I mean, like Kennedy, for example. You know, Kennedy won the election because of the way he looked. Nixon looked like a jerk. It's not that, I mean, I'm not saying that that one was actually a saint and the other one was a rascal. I mean, whatever they were. But everyone voted for Kennedy when they had the debate on television, and they could see the difference in the facial characteristics between Nixon and Kennedy. Because Nixon had terrible looking nose, and, you know, he looked like a used car salesman, basically, as many people said. Who would buy a car from this person? So, anyway, so both men and women become bewildered by this physical outward appearance. I think, I can trust you. And so the demon said, you know, we can trust you. You're being cute and telling us we can't trust you, but that's just your cuteness. And so basically Mohini Murthy took the nectar and she said, everybody sit down and rose. And we're going to distribute the nectar. And then she started to give it all to the demigods. And then one of the demons actually figured out what was happening. His name was Rahu. And he snuck into the line of demigods. And Mohini Murthy was giving the nectar to this Rahu. And just as the nectar went basically to his neck, the other demigods pointed out, you know, that's actually Rahu, who's a demon. And Mohini Murthy pulled out her Sudarshan Chakra disc, because she's Vishnu, and cut off his head. So the head up here remained alive, and down there was dead. So he was just a head. Anyway, he's very envious. We know Rahu causes the eclipses on the sun and the moon. So the moral of that story is, what is the moral of the story? The moral of the story is that this attraction can even cause one to give up one's eternality, or of course you're always eternal, immortality, or the recognition or the realization of your immortality, or your whole spiritual life, the attraction to the sense objects, because you think you're the enjoyer. It's interesting, isn't it? This is pretty much what's discussed in this verse. And there's many other examples of this too. I'm not going to go through all. I'll tell one funny example of Prabhupada's pastimes. Once upon a time, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, and he was traveling with his servant, Shrutakirti. And he said to Shrutakirti, please prepare me some prasadam, but don't go into the kitchen. At least don't go into the temple kitchen. Because in Los Angeles, there were a lot of ladies who wanted to get married. I don't know if you knew this. And anyway, whatever, I think you're going to understand. And so he went, but he disobeyed Prabhupada's instructions. He went into the kitchen. And he got cooked. He came back to Prabhupada, I guess a day or two later. He didn't spend a whole day in the kitchen. But he said, Prabhupada, I'm getting married. And Prabhupada said, where did you go? He said, I went into the kitchen. So he wasn't careful as far as guarding his senses. And then, Anyway, as a result, a nice devotee was born. His name was Mayapur Chandra. I don't know if any of you know him. He's one of my disciples. He's in India right now, and his wife is a very nice devotee, Champakalata. She's his teaching Gurukul in Mayapur, and she's the daughter of Urmila Mataji. Anyway, so it turned out all right. It turned out all right. So, anyway, there's many stories of people getting bewildered by this sensory attraction, particularly the as Prabhupada said, the rupa or the form is the first thing that occurs. Not Prabhupada. I mean, I'm sorry. This is Vinayananda Maharaj's purport. He says the first thing that occurs. So my point is, how do you conquer this lust, this disease in the heart? Because it's in your heart. It's not external. Like, if you have no lust, you can be like Ramananda Roy. Everybody knows the story about Ramananda Roy? There's this interesting story. Ramananda Roy, let's tell us a whole story, actually. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by this one devotee, Prajuna Mishra, please tell me about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, particularly the pastimes that were discussed between you and Ramananda Roy in Vijayanagar. So Lord Chaitanya says, all right, I'm not going to tell you, but you go to see Ramananda Roy. And so Ramananda Roy, he went to Ramananda Roy's house, but Ramananda Roy was busy. Ramananda Roy's servant said, Ramananda Roy is teaching the Devi Dasis how to dance. Devi Dasis are the traditional dancers in the temples in India. And they would only dance for the deities. They wouldn't dance publicly in front of everybody. But they were young girls. And in teaching them how to dance, he's dressing them, decorating their bodies, putting perfume on them, putting their ornaments on, and touching them in so many ways. And when Prajuna Mishra heard this, he got a little bewildered. He was thinking, he's supposed to be a great devotee, but he's interacting in such an intimate way with so many young girls. What's wrong? So Ramananda Roy eventually came back, but it was too late, so Prajuna Mishra said, well, I'm happy seeing you, getting your blessings, and he went back to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by him, what's happening? Because Lord Chaitanya asked him, Prajuna Mishra, did you see Ramananda Roy? And Prajuna Mishra said he was doing this, this, and that. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that this is Ramananda Roy's prerogative. Because he understands himself 100% as a gopi, a spiritual body. He's identifying with his spiritual body. Do you understand? We all have a spiritual body. That body is dormant now. We're not understanding it, recognizing it, or even knowing what it's like. Like, for example, Balaram, he's a cow in the spiritual world. I'm just joking. Hare Krishna. But if he was understand that, if it was true, which it's not, but if it was true, what would he do about it? It's not the right time for him to understand it, because he would simply try to go into the pasture with the other cows and the bulls would kill him. Right? Not a good idea if you think you're a cow. He would start mooing instead of chanting Hare Krishna. So we all do have a spiritual body. And right now we're identifying fully with this material body. You know, I think I'm a man, I think I'm American, I think I'm, 5 feet, 11 feet tall, my BMI is 24.6. You know what a BMI is? Body mass index. I check it every once in a while to make sure I'm in good health. Fully identifying with this material body. I'm losing hair up here. Losing hair. This is me, me. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the most attractive sannyasi of them all?
You are.
No. The point is, we're fully identifying with the body. Isn't it? It's just like, these are my toes, my lotus feet, my whatever. This is, fully identifying. But instead, our real identity is this spiritual body. So Ramananda Roy was fully identifying with his body as a gopi. Actually, Vishakha Devi. That's Ramananda Roy's ontological position. So here was one gopi helping the other gopis get dressed, right? So Prajnana Mishra went back after hearing that explanation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he very much appreciated hearing Krishna Katha from Ramananda Roy, because Ramananda Roy was fully absorbed. Lord Chaitanya said, he's the only one who has that prerogative to do that. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is God, but Lord Chaitanya was acting as an ordinary sannyasi, following the rules and regulations of sannyas. So that's really how one conquers these physical attractions that one has, whether attractions for tasting something, seeing something, touching something, smelling something, right? Hearing something. You know, we all want to hear different sweet songs of birds or something like that. It's interesting. Actually, if you've ever gone to Australia, the birds there are amazing. The most musical birds in the whole world. Yeah, Australia. Here, you know, you got a few little birds, you know, like crows. They go, gah, gah. Right? You don't have crows here. Oh, you don't have crows here. Okay, good. All right, but in Australia, the sweetest birds. So we're very attracted to going to Australia to hear these sweet birds. Chirp, chirp. You know, all sorts of birds they have. Of course, sometimes you're so attracted to them, then they attack you.
Birds?
Yeah, the birds attack in Australia. Because sometimes they're during mating season, they're protecting their nest. So many times I ride a bike in Australia when I'm there, and they dive bomb on you. It's like being in war. Boom! At least I'm wearing a helmet, so they can't hurt me, and glasses, so they can't touch my eyes. So anyway, so we're attracted to the sense objects because of our identification with this body. So the whole point is to progress sufficiently in Krishna consciousness so we identify with the spiritual body. The siddha deha. That's me, not this thing. That's the whole point. All right, you may say, that's a very elevated stage of devotional service. I'm not at that stage, you're not at the stage, so what do we do in the meantime that we haven't realized our siddha deha? Because that is a very elevated stage. Well, Prabhupada gives the solution. He says, do deity worship. Why? Because if one, as Rupa Goswami says in a very little sarcastic sense, if one goes to see that smiling boy Govinda sitting on the bank of the Keshi Ghat playing his flute, isn't it one will desire all? One will lose all desire for society, friendship, and love. So the solution, Prabhupada said that's the solution. Because ultimately, yes, the solution is to have one spiritual body. Yes, I'm a cow, I'm a gopi, I'm a coward boy, I'm a tree in Vrindavan. And then you execute this manaseva, which is mental service to Krishna, but actually it's real because in the spiritual realm. And then you concentrate on the Ashtakalaya Leela. You know what the Ashtakalaya Leela is? Anyone know that? Eightfold pastimes. Krishna does different things at different times of the day. Like right now, Krishna's taking breakfast. No, not on the altar, I understand. He's already taken breakfast. Which is roughly the right time. That's why the deity worship is very much supposed to be in tune with the Ashtakalaya Leela. Like first thing in the morning, like at 4:30 in the morning, when we do Mangalarti, Krishna is with Radharani and he's being woken up so he can get back in time, at home in time, so his mother doesn't discover that he's gone. So like at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, wake up, Krishna, wake up. You know, you better wake up. You're going to be in trouble unless you wake up. And Radharani wakes up. And so they wake up and then they run back home. But in their haste to run back home, they put on each other's clothes. So Krishna is wearing blue. And Radharani is wearing yellow. You know, that's not the normal procedure. I mean, here, of course, with our deity worship, we dress the deities in all sorts of different colors, but normally Krishna is wearing the yellow dhoti. You know that. And Radharani is wearing blue, because blue is Krishna's color. That's why she wears a blue sari or blue dress. And Krishna is wearing yellow because that reminds him of Radharani. Yellow is Krishna's favorite color. And blue is Radharani's favorite color. You understand. So, anyway, so they go back home, and Krishna pretends he's been sleeping. You know, Mother Yashoda opens up the door and finds Krishna there, wrapped in blue. And she says, what's this? And why is Krishna so tired after sleeping the whole night? He's still tired because he's been awake the whole night, practically speaking. And why does he have all these marks on his body? Were they from the thorns? But actually, they're not from the thorns. Anyway, they're from the pastimes. And so Krishna says, oh, I got Balaram's dhoti by accident. Because Balaram's dhoti is blue like that. And so, anyway, so this is called Ashtakalaya Leela. That's what happens during the Mangalarati time. And then later on, there's the bathing of Krishna, which is pretty much the same time as we bathe the deities here. And then after that, there's Krishna's feeding Krishna, and then Krishna goes out. At this point, Krishna's going out, let's see, this time in the morning, Krishna's going out to the pasturing ground. And he's saying goodbye. Mother Yashoda is following him, and he's saying, go back home, don't follow me, you know, because he doesn't want all of them to follow him to the pasturing ground. But they just, so the whole day they remain stunned, looking out, waiting for Krishna to come back. Anyway, this is something done when one realizes one's spiritual body. That one internally is doing this. And not only is one internally doing this, if one's really on that platform, we find examples of devotees coming back from that meditation with things from the spiritual world. That happen often with Srinivasacharya. You know the story about Srinivasacharya and Ramchandra Kaviraj? No, you probably don't know that story. One time Srinivasacharya was meditating like that on his spiritual form, spiritual body, spiritual pastimes. And his wife was worried because it was for 3 days and he hadn't come out of his meditation. He hadn't drunk anything, hadn't done anything. And, you know, obviously you're going to die after some time. So she called for his chief disciple, Ramchandra Kaviraj. She said, help your guru. And so Ramchandra Kaviraj sat down next to his guru and entered into the same meditation. And they were looking, in the meditation, they were looking for Radharani's anklet, which had fallen, or toe ring, which had fallen into the water, the Jamuna. So they were both looking as gopis in their original spiritual form. And then they came back, they found the anklet or the toe ring, they gave it to Radharani, and they both came back at the same time out of their meditation. And sometimes they would bring back like garlands from that. So it's real. It's that meditation is real. It's not something like just imagination, you know, just like, you know, we could dream the other night I was in the Avatar movie and I was one of the blue people in the Avatar movie. Like that. So, no, we have so many dreams which aren't real. Just illusions within an illusion. So that's really the ultimate thing that saves us from the material identification, from being captured by the sense objects. But in the meantime, everyone should do deity worship. That's essential, obligatory. Prabhupada said it's obligatory for the householders. Because we were talking about this the other day, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like Yogendra was saying, we have very little help here in the temple to do deity worship. And Yogendra is having to do so many artis. Of course, he's become so purified, he's realized his spiritual body by doing it. He's a real yogi. You know, so look at the benefit. You know, he's become completely absorbed in Radharadhakanta. And the rest of us are absorbed in pounds, shilling, and pence, or Prabhupada's. That's an English saying, of course. Yeah. Yeah, but you also need people to worship them, not just money. You can't just put a pile of money in front of them and let them do their own arti. You just get a robot with the money or something like that.
No, so, I'll pay you arti if they put a pile of money in
front. Okay.
Yeah, I need to ask that, but I'm for that.
Yeah. So, yes, that's, I think that's one way to do it. But so the devotee should be enthusiastic to do this deity worship because it actually frees you from the attraction to the senses and the sense objects. And it makes you happy. Could you see the beautiful form of Krishna on the altar? Radha, Radha Kanta, Shishi Gornitai. I mean, they're so attractive. And I'll just tell one final story about that in the morning class, but I know I'm going on too long. Once upon a time, there was a devotee named Dhanardas. No, it wasn't a devotee. It was a person named Dhanardas. He was very attractive to his wife, or his girlfriend, and his girlfriend was very attractive to him. So he was walking down the road, backwards, fanning his girlfriend with an umbrella over her head. It was during Rath Yatra. Imagine that. Rath Yatra. And so Ramanujacharya's disciples saw him doing that, and they started laughing. And Ramanujacharya, the great Acharya, said, "Don't laugh at him. Bring him here. I want to talk to him." And he said to this person, his name was Dhanardas. Dhanu means wealth, servant of wealth, Dhanardas. Anyway. So he said, "What? Why are you doing this?" And he said, "Well, my girlfriend has beautiful eyes." And Ramanujacharya said, "If I could show you someone with more beautiful eyes, will you go for it?" And he said, "Yes, yes." Because he was thinking, you know, this is going to be some Bollywood star or actress or something. And so that night he took him to see Lord Ranganath, the deity of the temple. And they opened the curtains and he saw the Lord's eyes. And he said, "Wow. Wow." And he fell in love. And as a result of that, then he got married to his girlfriend. And they lived happily ever after as pure devotees of the Lord. So it's a happy ending. It's not an ending of sannyas or anything like that, where someone takes sannyas and dumps his girlfriend. But they both became pure devotees, and they were so pure and devoted to Krishna that later on, when Sripad Ramanujacharya had his disciples test their purity by stealing her jewelry, then he was upset, the man was upset, that she didn't let the devotees steal all of her jewelry because she turned over as they were taking the jewelry off of her body and frightened the devotees away. And then Ramanujacharya showed how the sannyasis were more attached to their opulences because in the middle of the night he switched all their clothes and they were fighting each other. So he said, "Who is actually renounced? You or Dhanardas and his wife?" Anyway, so that's an interesting story. So that's an indication of how we can become detached from the senses and the sense objects in this world. So any questions or comments? Yeah.
Why do the scriptures sometimes state that Ramananda Roy is an incarnation of
Arjuna?
Yeah.
It's considered to be a combined incarnation of Arjuna and Vishakha. And also another point. Somehow or other, this happens, you know. And sometimes, when you talk about incarnation, you're not talking about a literal incarnation. You're talking about empowered. Just like you have, Prithu Maharaj, who is an incarnation of Krishna, but he's Jiva Tattva. He's empowered incarnation. So you can be empowered by different living entities. In Krishna Shakti, you know, this Krishna Shakti, you're empowered. You can say, I mean, just like there was one devotee, and I forget what his name was in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, that anyone who saw him, it was the same as seeing Lord Chaitanya. Is that Prajuna or something like that? Or Prajuna Das Brahmachari, I think was his name. It wasn't Nishina Das Brahmachari, it was Prajuna. So he was empowered in that way. So, you know, you could say he's an incarnate. You can, just like we say in the morning, Sakshara Vitvayana Samasta Shastri. The spiritual master he's considered the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. So he's like Prabhupada Shakta Vaishyavatar, right? So Prabhupada is, you know, Prabhupada's manifesting Krishna. So I'm not saying he is Krishna, but Shakta Vaishyavatar. So anyway, so that's how I usually understand it. You're talking about, you know, incarnation. And also another way of understanding is according to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that all the residents in Goloka Vrindavan expand as the other residents of the other dhams as you go down from Goloka Vrindavan. Like Garuda, who is a bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, is originally Sridham or Sudham. Sridham, I think. Yeah, Sridham. In the in Goloka Vrindavan, but in Vaikuntha, he's Garuda, the bird carrier of the Lord. So that's another way of understanding it. That, I mean, these spiritual things are very difficult to understand. But yes, but you're absolutely right. Both descriptions are given there that Ramananda Roy is Arjuna and Vishakha. And his brothers are considered the other Pandavas. And his father is considered an incarnation of Pandu. Vaninath Roy. You remember that? Vaninath Roy, yeah. You're absolutely right on that question. So any other questions, comments, problems? Yeah. Yeah.
Prerogative for Ramananda Roy to be a dance instructor and be associating with women to some degree if he's playing a part of the
sutra.
That's what it was said.
Yeah, I mean, it's appropriate Dharma, yeah, according to Varnashram Dharma, too. But even it. But he's also a pure devotee. I mean, that's another point that certainly you wouldn't want to take instructions about the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna from someone who's just an ordinary Shudra. You want to consider, you know, yeah, he's a pure devotee. Yes, it is a Shudra occupation. What you're saying is actually true. That the arts and the instructors in the arts are generally considered Shudras. That is true. But he was following the proper Varnashram Dharma. Yeah, that's a good point. That it would not have been appropriate for Brahma to do that. Or what the figure of sannyasi. You know, sannyasi is teaching Devidasi how to dance. But it's interesting. I mean, let's take Prabhupada's pastimes, for example. Prabhupada actually showed the first devotees, the first lady devotees, how to put on saris. You know, the story of Jadarani. And Prabhupada's a sannyasi, so... And I'm not saying that we sannyasis should be showing ladies how to put on. I don't even know how to put on a sari. Thank God. Yeah.
In reference to, it's called Siddha Pranali.
Yeah.
The meditating on the lotus pastime in your spiritual form. We see that, or it appears that actually devotees from Prabhupada's system, they are going back home. And even Prabhupada, you know, revealed that and confirmed that, you know, Jayananda Prabhu, for instance, that he went back home.
Right.
But it doesn't appear that they were manifesting that particular process of, you know, of practicing that, and even, you know, we've been cautioned against like the Radhakrishna Babaji's that take it so cheaply. So how should we relate?
Well, first of all, Siddha Pranali is the process by which you're actually told what your spiritual identity is, and generally that was given previously, even to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at the time of initiation. However, that particular aspect of the process we don't follow, but it's understood that as the devotees progress in spiritual life, they will be able to, it's called siddha deha, I mean, being, even while you're in this body, being able to understand what their spiritual identity is. I mean, that's part of, progressing in spiritual life, not artificially, and not that it interferes with one's service for Krishna, and not that you let anyone else know about it. I mean, that's the problem. Or you have to run to some Radhakund Babaji. But by the process of serving Prabhupada's mission, specifically helping the preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada,
these things will be manifest to one. I mean, otherwise, if we say they won't be manifest to one, I think we're really going against what the Shastras say, what the previous Acharyas say. And Prabhupada said, deserve and then desire. So these things will be manifest naturally. And you, and another thing is you could confirm, let's say, whatever realizations, like we have so many realizations, I'm not the body and things like that. I mean, it's like I get these letters from disciples all the time that I've just realized that this material world is an illusion. You know, it's a realization. So they share it with me, and I said, that's a good realization. So as we advance, we may have the realization of who we are in the spiritual world, but not that we're going to talk about it on the internet and Facebook, you know. The Facebook, you know, I just realized I'm a gopi. And my name is Gopi, Gopi, Gopi Devi Dasi, or something like that. No, but it's part of the process. It's part of the process that, because in the next life, what happens is after we, first of all, you don't go directly back to the spiritual world after leaving this body. In any case, you go to where Krishna's pastimes are taking place. And you get a chance to interact with Krishna and his associates. And then you get trained up and then you go back to Godhead. So there's part of a whole process of going back to Godhead. And I don't think we can deny the process that's been given us by our acharyas. However, we don't want to be jumping into that process prematurely. So therefore, devotees should associate with advanced devotees who can corroborate or tell them whether they're actually ready for that particular aspect of devotional service. I mean, I've met very few devotees who are ready, and most devotees who think that they are ready are not ready for it. So but you know, you should understand that after 30, 40, 50 years of chanting seriously and worshiping the deities and serving Prabhupada's mission, I mean, you got to get some realization. I mean, some realization has to come. I mean, at least you should understand you're not the body. So, but, you know, we shouldn't jump into it. Like Prabhupada describes, he has this poem, he says, big, big belly, big, big monkey, sail on jumping melancholy. So if one tries to imitate Hanuman, that's the point. That if one thinks they're like Hanuman and tries to jump prematurely without the powers of Hanuman, then they'll fall flat in their face. You know, Ceylon means, of course, Sri Lanka. Ceylon jumping melancholy means you become depressed and fall on your face. So at the right stage, this is what occurs in devotional service. I mean, if I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to execute devotional service for many, many lifetimes and never realize I'm not the body, and to realize you're not the body, you got to realize who you are. It's not just a negation. You know, first of all, I'm servant of Krishna. That's a common denominator to all the different rasas. But then that has to become more and more clear how that service manifests. Like that. But it's something that, you know, you don't talk about during Bhagavatam class. But it's part of the process that our acharyas have given us. I mean, if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's clearly there. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But it has to be done with due caution under the... At least one should be on the platform of nishta. Nishta means... I mean, someone asked me that question in New Orleans the other day. They said, I'm on the platform of nishta. Why am I falling down? I said, you're not on the platform of nishta. I said, nishta means 24 hours a day. It doesn't mean good sadhana only. That's part of nishta. Nishta means that, yes, good sadhana, but then after I leave the temple room, I'm also good and Krishna conscious the rest of the day. I'm not losing control of my tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, or words throughout the whole rest of the day.
And nishta means steady?
Steady, yes. Yes, a platform, you know, adoshvaratata, sadhu sangota, bhajanakriya, and then anartanavritti, like that, and then nishta, and then ruchi, then a shakti, then bhava. You know about this, right? You should learn about these things. You're supposed to know Sanskrit. And then bhava, and then finally prema. It's part of the progressive march of devotional service. So,
You know, when one is nishta, not deviating from any aspect of Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day, then obviously these things become revealed, just like the sun coming up in the daytime, the example given in the Gita. It's gradually everything, you see everything, colors. First of all, you see black and white, then you see colors, and then you see everything nicely when the sun is fully up. So this is, I'm not saying you should cultivate it, but it ultimately, that's part of, I mean, Rupa Goswami, Nectar Devotion talks about that. It's part of Raganuga Sadhana. I mean, there's Vaidhi Sadhana and Raganuga Sadhana. Vaidhi means you're just doing everything because of the rules and regulations. Vaidhi. Which is good. And then Raganuga means there's some spontaneity, but at that point, you begin to feel some specific attraction to a particular resident of Vrindavan and Navadvip. And you begin to serve that person in your mind. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, serving. I mean, for example, let's say I'm very attracted to Lord Nityananda. And so, you know, then I meditate my mind. I'm massaging Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. It's not that, you know, it gets all sexy and racy and stuff like that. Or if you're very attracted to Radha and Krishna, you meditate on swinging the deities. I mean, we've got to fix the mind on Krishna somehow or other. I mean, you can't meditate on the bills of New Taliban 24 hours a day. Of course, meditating on your service is nice. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, Krishna will force himself into your mind and your heart like that. And like Hanuman, he's meditating on Lord Ram's pastimes 24 hours a day. So, I mean, this whole meditation, you know, internal meditation has to be developed. I mean, at least meditate on your service, what you're doing externally, and then eventually you meditate on Krishna's pastimes. Why are we hearing Krishna's pastimes? So, of course, we don't want to encourage the sahaja aspect. You know, I don't find many people ready to even go to leave Vaidhi Bhakti to go to Raganuga Bhakti. One aspect of Raganuga Bhakti is that one still executes all the rules and regulations very strictly. But they're doing it spontaneously and also doing it to set a good example. I remember there was one devotee who thought he was on the platform of Raganuga Bhakti and he wasn't so strict in his sadhana. And I said to him, you know, why don't you have good sadhana and set a good example? He said, well, isn't there any place for spontaneous devotional service in ISKCON? I said, there is, but that's internal. Externally, Prabhupada said, even if one is on that high platform, one acts like a sadhaka. One acts like, you know, a neophyte. In the sense that, you know, I'm afraid of Maya. So these things are not to be neglected, but there's a proper time, place, and circumstance for them. And if one prematurely does it, then it just increases the lust. So, any other questions or comments about these things? Questions? You have your hand up, Yogi?
No.
I was just stretching. Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, discussions, requests?
How about blessings?
Blessings? You have to ask Yogindra. He's the one who's realized his spiritual identity. Because he's been serving the deity so many years, and yourself too.
I'm the blesser. I give all of our donors blessings.
Yeah.
In the devotee 56.
Yeah. I mean, you serve the deity. It's so nice. We have Radharada Kanta here. They can make you happy if you serve them. Right? It's just such an easy process. Just get on the altar and offer some incense. Nobody should be reluctant. Keep it simple, sadhu.
Like Guru Maharaj said that if you have Brahman initiation, you should have at least one deity service in a week.
Yeah. That's a requirement. Why else are people taking Brahman initiation? So they can walk around with their threads and just ask for Brahma Bhojan? It means food. Okay. I think we have time now because it's time for Brahma Bhojan.
Sanyas. Sanyas. Prasadam. All right.